Blog Talk Radio.
I would like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio tonight. This is 11-11, November the 11th. It's Veterans Day. We wish all the veterans out there a happy Veterans Day. And I want to just thank everyone for supporting John Talk Radio through the years. We started in 2008, and this week on the 15th, we're going to have our 9th year anniversary going into our 10th year. And it's all about the independent musicians and all about independent music, and we really appreciate the support that we've gotten through the years. My special guest tonight is Thomas Lothar. Thomas has a new album out, Intersections in Life. We heard the one cut from the album, and that was Roberto Leaves a Message. And the album is beautiful, and it's done incredibly well. And Thomas, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Johnny.
It's great to have you on. We've had Thomas and I have talked before. We did a part one, and so we're doing part two. And I like continuing conversations on this with musicians and artistic people, because it's just it's like an ocean to me. There, you can't really go to the end of it, the conversation about music and about art. So I love doing it. Thomas, here's the first I've heard journalists say this recently. Question one, which I don't really like that, but this would be our we'll start off with. I was just recently having some conversations. My daughter is a social worker, and she's a licensed counselor. And we were talking. I was talking to her about certain people that I know, and about how that she was saying one of the things in counseling is one of the most important things is to people like to tell their stories, and they like to tell their story. And I was thinking about how in life, everybody has a story. Every single person, no matter who it is, they have a story, and everyone likes to tell their stories. And then I was thinking about, okay, so Thomas is a musician, and he's written lots of songs, and some you've written, Thomas, have lyrics to them, and Intersections in Life is instrumental. And I was thinking, okay, so in looking at the album and the liner notes and all the things, there's a lot of personal things here, and there's a lot of stories in this album. How difficult, or I don't know if it's the difficult would be a word, but how challenging is it to tell a story without words?
Well, that's an interesting question. And it's interesting that you even brought up the aspect of storytelling as well. One of my fans left a review on my CD on the, it was on iTunes. And she mentioned about how the storytelling of these songs somehow is apparent simply by just hearing the music. She was kind of perplexed by it as well. And, well, the idea for the storytelling in these particular songs came from, I guess it was part of the writing process, because when I sit down and compose music, it's improvisational for the most part. And the first draft of a song comes out, and fortunately there's the record button on the, you know, ready to go while I'm improvising live. And as a result, I'm able to take the music and mold it into something more cohesive and finished sounding over a period of time. But over that time, the music starts to evoke images to me, which do remind me of specific stories I've had in my life. And then that helps with the coming up with the title of the song. And additionally, once I have the title of the song and the story behind it, that even helps propel the song even further, where I can actually delve more deeply into the impact that I want with each piece. Like some of the stories come easily, some not so much. But once it's kind of like three different things start happening at once, and once they all come together, then I can finish the song rather quickly and then present it as it is on the piano.
Is it difficult to say, Thomas, this song is complete? I know some musicians and some artists and some composers that will continue. They have to have somebody, whether it's a producer or somebody close to them, come in and say, you got it. That's all. You can't tinker with it anymore, because they still are always doing that. And there are some I've heard of that will continue until somebody says, you got to stop. How does that work with you and your music?
Well, that's true. There's sometimes on some songs I think I'm finished, and then I'll listen to them like about a week later, and I go, no, that's not it. And I assume that happens a lot with most musicians. But then there's other songs where I do think they're finished, and then I'll set them aside, and then a month later I'll come back and listen to it again. I go, those passages could be more clear, or they could be more concise, It just could flow a little bit better. But yeah, I actually finished recording the music for this in November of not last year, but the year before. This 15, November
okay.
of 2015. And so it was almost the past, I would say, wait a minute. This is 2017, right? No. So November of 2016, I'm sorry. Is that what I said? And it was like at least, I would say, 8 or 9 months of tinkering before I finally decided that the songs were as simple but yet as entertaining as I wanted them to be, because sometimes you can be throw too much in there. And indeed, I did take out some stuff that I thought would be really good, but then I was like, that's too much. So, but I do have my partner, Doug. He's pretty honest about a gut reaction to a lot of the songs. He'll listen and help me out to, like, be a third set of ears, a fourth set of ears. What am I saying? Second set of ears. How many ears do we have? I'm thinking of four ears on two people. So, but yeah, he's very helpful. He's actually a counselor, and so his insights into human nature really come handy when I'm trying to provide a mood for a song or provide a flow to a seemingly a story that a person could imagine in their head. So, right, lucky me, I found Doug. He helps me out. In fact, Doug's the one that encouraged me to get back into music after taking a 25-year break. Well,
you know,
there
I
you
go.
Talking, thank you, Dougie.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody the other day about that, about how they said, well, I know this musician friend of mine, and they were so into music at one time, and then they just dropped. And I said, that happens a lot, and I don't know why it happens. I don't even think they know why it happens, but there has to be a certain everything. Some things have to line up inside of the person in order to feel comfortable to create music again. I think that's a good thing. I personally do, because I think some people do it, Thomas, when they shouldn't be doing it, maybe forcing a little bit. And then you get into that whole creativity thing with art and all of that. But I think it's one of the most, it's probably the coolest thing on the earth is being able to create something, whether it's a piece of music or whether it's, you know, a painting or a sketch or anything. And I think this, like when you complete a song, let's just say for in this situation, Thomas, how intersections in life when you complete a CD, and I believe it has 11 songs on it. So that's quite a few songs. How do you feel after that's done? I mean, do you feel like this sense of accomplishment and wow, this like that was that those are, you know, those were inside of me and now they're out for the world to listen to. And I can only imagine how that would feel. How does it feel from your perspective?
Well, there's a huge sense of relief when you're finished with it due to just the amount of time you put in, countless hours, you know, over a 2-year period. And so, to be honest, sometimes by the end of it, when you're done with it and you come down to the tedious parts, like trying to design the CD cover and put all that stuff and all the legal stuff to get the thing published and all that, by then you're kind of like, you're almost sick of it.
Yeah.
But there's a little, you have this post-depression letdown when you're finished, because suddenly you have all this free time that you didn't realize was being sucked up working on this project. So you kind of feel like you had a baby, and then, you know, when you get all depressed, like, oh, I had the baby now. Well, now what do I do?
Well, how's it work with, like, right now, are you feeling like another project coming on? Are you working on other songs?
Actually, there's always little songs going over in my head. And I've always wanted to put together another rock CD to be reminiscent of my, you know, more popular days in the 80s. But to be honest, something just came up recently that, much to my surprise, and I'm very thrilled about, that a local jazz piano player that I know, who's was very proficient back in the day in the 80s. He's as a teacher, and he loves my music, And every time I meet them for dinner and stuff, I'm like, yeah, I want to do a CD with you playing piano and me singing those silly torch songs, you know, from the Great American Songbook. Because, you know, as you know, I used to sing professionally. So suddenly he bit. And he's like, well, let's try and put this out there then. And so I think maybe within the next year I'll be working on a CD with a bunch of American Songbook stuff in there, just as a change of pace from hardcore working on original music in my head. Well,
that's really cool.
Some torch songs coming out.
And we'll definitely have a show around that. How about going back, Thomas, to the time when you were writing music in the rock genre? How is that different when you're putting together a song that has, you know, not just an instrumental song, but has lyrics? Is that a totally different approach to writing back then than you have now, or is it the same?
It's fairly similar. Back then, because of my abilities on the guitar and bass guitar, I was able to write music in my head more easily because pop music like that is easy to, kind of like, you know, how Mozart would write music in his head. And by the time you start whipping it out to the other band members, you're like, this is how the song goes. And it's only a 3-minute song with a lot of repetition. And as a result, it's pretty easy to write songs that way. This new type of music is only slightly different in that I'm doing it by myself, and it's more difficult to memorize the first time it comes out since it's so more classical oriented. There's no often repeat passages through it. It's very melodic in a long phrase. So that's where modern technology, because of that record button on the piano, that really helps arrest these fleeting thoughts in a way that I can arrest them and make them into something everybody else can enjoy as well.
Yeah,
I used
really
to improvise on piano like this when I was a kid. And, you know, I remember Mom hearing me play, just sit down and just play stuff kind of like this. And more, well, it was kind of like imitation Bach music, I would call it, more classical. And she goes, oh, play that again. And I'm like, I don't remember how it goes. I just now played it, and now I don't remember. Sorry.
Well, see, that's pretty cool in itself. That's kind of like a stream, right? a stream of consciousness that's creating at that moment. And I think that's really cool how that happens, because it's like, you know, also there are some tremendous musicians that, you know, people want to hear them in concert, Thomas, to just do the same records over and over. And they'll take like a popular song or something and then just totally go off in a different direction or a different production with it. And I think that to me that's really creative. And for you to be able to do that at an early age, that was pretty awesome. That had to feel pretty cool.
Yeah, snuck up on me. I didn't know it was anything particularly gifted. I just, you know, did what I came naturally. Everybody's, you know, now that I'm older, everyone's like, how do you do that? I go, I don't know. You can't do it? I don't know. You just sit down and start playing. There you go.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, how do you feel about, like, modern technology now with the studio software, and a lot of people can make records now, or not actually. Yeah, I guess they can. You can make an album, you know, with, you know, Pro Tools and different things like that. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, is it in the middle? Because it's like in the past, when you would do some type of recording, you had to be pretty good, and you had to have people that supported you, and you had to have production. A lot of times you had to have record labels behind you. But now with the, you know, with like independent artists and people that can, if you can get the software and you can make your own music, what are the good and the bad about that, Thomas? What are the challenges, and what do you think the good parts of that is? Of anybody having access to that.
Excuse me. Just choking on my own saliva here. Actually, I think it's a good thing. Having access to a tool which can help you be creative, I mean, that's invaluable. It's like being a painting, you know, when you're a kid, but your parents can't afford to buy you paints, or paintbrushes, and you know, it's just kind of sad to have the ability to be creative and not have a tool that would help you do it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But with other musicians where they just sit down and play his guitar and they tinkle around on that all day. I mean, the guitar in itself is a tool as well. And so without that guitar, you're never going to be a better guitar player. You're just going to be wishing you were a better guitar player. So I think these software and stuff, they contribute to the writing process in a way that makes it easier for a person's idea to be laid out and then instantly accessed to see if the idea is worth working on or not.
Yeah.
A lot of you can imagine if somebody just has the right tools, that doesn't mean they're going to be a good songwriter. You still have to be the ability to analyze your work and dissect it and take it apart if it needs to be, you know, more listenable, I guess you would say.
How does it work with your music, Thomas, as far as production? Do you have somebody help you with that or the mixing of it, or do you do that?
I just do it all myself. When I was in the 80s and I had was working with all the rock bands, I was apparently I was a really gifted producer, and I was able to bring out a lot of bands would hire me to be the sound engineer for some of the recordings, and I was able to bring their voice out without making it sound like my voice. You know, I wanted the band to sound as good as they could on the recordings. And, of course, you know, you try and do that in a big professional atmosphere, you're going to go broke. But since I was pretty much considered an amateur, even though I was a professional musician, they knew, call Tom and he'll make you sound good on your recordings. And so I was always pretty good at it. I'm kind of rusty, though, now, since I haven't really looked into the modern recording equipment. Back then, I just used a reel-to-reel tape and outboard gear, just like you would perform live with on stage. But with all this computer stuff, it's a whole different ballgame. A little more, I think it's more complex now, maybe too complex for me. I like grabbing a knob and just turning that knob and being able to just grab it right away without calling up a menu screen and trying to find out what parameter I need to tweak.
Now, I find that incredibly interesting because of the fact that I personally have never been in a recording studio and I've never seen it work. I've always wanted to, and one of these days I hope I can, and watch people work and see how everything comes together. When you're talking about, you know, sitting at a soundboard and working with this and trying to make everything blend together, I think that is incredible. That itself is an art form or a talent, because I've heard bands that I've heard on the albums with good production and good backing vocals and good musicians with them sound amazing. And then live, they weren't that great, but they were in studio, man, they sounded amazing. Give us some of the tips to that. When you were talking about how people will call you and say, hey, you know, Tom can work with this on this and bring the voices out and make it sound good. I mean, what were you listening for when you had your headphones on and you're listening to these guys? What were you able to listen for, Tom, to say, okay, that's not as much of that, a little bit more of that? Because I think that's really interesting. To me, it is.
Well, the sound spectrum has, you know, lows and highs. And so when there's, you basically have to even things out. If there's like too much mid-range stuff, like if the guitar things are like the same exact note registers as the lead vocals, or somebody's playing over on top of the lead vocal, and it's just everybody has to be in their little niche. I would say that the bass has to fill in the bottom and the drums fill in the feel, and the thing is to keep those instruments separated in the listening area. Still make them so they all meld together when you hear it as one giant thing. And a lot of that comes from just trying to make a good, clean, clear recording, but not so sterile that it sounds like you're in a foam box. A couple of times in my early days when I was in the recording studio and I wasn't a producer, we had some recordings and we sounded great live, but in the studio, we sounded like we had all the life and energy sucked out of us. It was so antiseptic. And I was always curious back then. I go, well, why do these national records sound so different? But here we're in a local recording studio spending, you know, hundreds of dollars an hour on this thing, and it sounds like crap. So I was typically just mesmerized by how we could spend so much money and sound so bad in the studio. And it just comes down to the ambience of your instruments and where they're placed. And it's the ambience, I think, has a lot to do with it. And it was pretty much underrated at the time. There's a lot of everybody's wised up to that nowadays. They know you have to have an ambient sound along with it, like, you know, reverb or something that replicates the room you're performing in. And contrasting ambiences are really nice, where you have super dry bass line underneath this super huge booming drum kit. With this, it's the contrasts are also interesting as well. There's all sorts of ways you can go with the sound.
What are some of your favorite albums, you know, maybe growing up or now, it doesn't really matter, whatever you have heard, Thomas, that has, you just think, wow, the production is just amazing in this. Is there anything you could use as an example?
Wow, that's a good question. There's a couple of them, but gosh, I'm trying to think back, man. Wow. Some of those Rush albums, like the Hemispheres area, it was after 2112 and all that. Those Rush albums of the early 80s, they were very, had a lot of spatial sound to them, very clear, but very powerful. And there's, this might sound funny, but there's an album that I really don't like, and I kind of hate to bring forth an artist that I don't really care for. But there was a band from the 80s called Supertramp, and I was never really a fan, but I was always so in awe of the sound on their album. It was so clear, and everything was, you could hear all the instruments, and it was produced so well. So I was like, God, these guys really have the sound down. But even though I don't really care for their music, I really admired the sound of their albums. They were always really well produced.
That's really interesting. I think that's cool. I'm thinking that's Roger Hodgson was in that band, but I'm not completely sure. But I think he was. And when you're talking about production like that, I'll just go with that for a minute, because I always thought Bob Marley's records, although I didn't really like a lot of his stuff, I liked some of it really well, and some of it I didn't like. But I was always kind of impressed with the production of the records. I thought, I don't know who did it. I think I've tried to look it up a couple of times, but I thought that's kind of funny how that the production of the album to me superseded the actual music. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, well, I know they were really well done. And the thing about sometimes if something's produced really well, you don't really notice the production. It's just the music sounds so natural and the music sounds so full, but you don't notice, oh, this is really produced really well. It just goes into your brain as that's what it's supposed to sound like.
Yeah, and then you go into the lo-fi thing, which was popular by, you know, Guided by Voices and bands like that, like in Dayton in the 90s, that were trying very hard to sound very not professional and very lo-fi and very just something taped together in a garage, which was now an art form of that sort, which it took me a while to get around that. But I know how that's kind of interesting too, because I mean, they were really trying to not sound like they were spending hundreds of dollars in a studio, but they were, that's kind of cool how that was all going on. But, my guest is Thomas Lowther, and I want you to know about his latest release, Intersections in Life. And I know that it is Thomas is on Facebook, and his music is on iTunes and Pandora and Spotify, CD Baby, Amazon, YouTube, and all over the place. If somebody wants the CD or the downloads, is there anything that I haven't talked about or how they can get the music, Thomas?
Gosh, well, the downloads, well, they're available from all those outlets. Like CD Baby is especially reliable in that. I would advise doing a download from CD Baby into the Android phones, though. I found out for some reason the files don't work. I have no idea why, but trust it on the computer. Unless I haven't tried it on iPhones. They might work on iPhones. But, yeah, Spotify, you get it for free, but then, of course, you don't get the CD. But the CDs, I have tons of CDs here at home, and the easiest way to get one of those is to just email me directly. We can get that email address out to – it's LOWTOM, which is Low Tom, Thomas Lothar, at AOL.com. And I can sell them to you that way. It's the easiest way to get a real CD where you can read all the liner notes and get all the neat little stories for each song. It's really cool.
And you can see the artwork. Would you like to talk about the artwork on the CD? That's really awesome.
Oh, yeah. Well, that would be interesting. The artist is a friend of mine, in fact. I was originally going to use this interesting photograph of a piano that I took that had some vertical blinds in the distance, and they were reflecting in the keys on the piano, and they made all these crisscrossy lines. And that's where I came up with the intersections in life concept there. But then over the year of working on the CD, I remembered that my friend Brian Bollinger, he's also an artist, a painting artist, I'm just going to say, visual artist, and his specialty is all his paintings have these crisscrossy lines in it. And it sounds kind of, you know, simple, but when you see his work, you're just like, geez, all these crisscrossing lines and these fantastic colors. And he said, you know, all these intersecting lines, I mean, how obvious does it have to be? So I asked him if I could use some of his work, and he sent me about, 12 different image files of different works he had. All of them are really amazing, and I picked two of them to be the Intersections in Life logo for the CD. So if you get the CD, there's all these beautiful artwork of these colorful intersecting lines. And people say, oh, how'd you do that on the computer? I go, no, it's actually this painting this guy did, Brian Bollinger. Go figure.
And we can give Brian, Brian have a website or anything that people are interested in his artwork? And maybe we can plug that, because I think it's so cool to, like you're talking about, you know, computer art and real people making art, and there's just nothing cooler than that. And I just think, you know, Brian Bollinger, how do you spell his last name, Tom?
His last name is spelled, hold on a second, let me look at here. I know it's spelled different than what you normally would think. It's Brian, B-R-I-A-N, of course, but the last name is B-A-L-L-E-N-G-E-R, Bollinger. Not Bollinger with an O, but B-A-L-L-E-N-G-E-R. And I've tried Googling him, and he doesn't. I haven't really found a new website that he's put together yet. But hopefully, well, maybe since the last time I Googled him, maybe he has something now. But I guess you would Google Brian Bollinger artwork, and maybe that would come up.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It just fits perfectly with the CD. And, you know, I always like to talk about when I grew up, you know, the album was the big thing. I still love albums, and I still, you know, last week I interviewed a really great band from Cincinnati named New Sincerity Works. They are so good, and you should check them out. It's Mike Tittle's band, and he's a producer, and his album, you know, to me, it was really cool. And he said, hey, I'll send you an LP. And I thought, how cool is that to, you know, that
Ooh.
People are still making LPs. And I just love that. And the CD itself, I like the download music, but I also love to just go through it and see, like, you have really cool pictures and all kinds of stuff going on. You have little stories, and it just makes everything more personal, in my opinion. And I can remember spending so much time as a young person reading through, you know, getting an album and taking the time to read the liner notes and read all the things about the songs and read the lyrics to the songs. And I think that's really a kind of a lost art that I'm glad people are doing that again. So that's cool.
Yeah, I love, having a gigantic CD in your hand, a giant album in your hand is like having the work of art right there in your lap.
Yeah. It is cool. And actually, it's, you can frame them and they look pretty cool. Thompson, we started off the show playing the song, the first song on the album, Roberto Leaves a Message. And I want you to talk about that. If you could give us a story behind that and maybe if there's anything behind the writing of it. And then we'll play another song. But talk to us about that, because I think that's one of the coolest things about your music is that it's the feel of the music and the emotion of the music. Talk about that song and how that was written and if there's any story behind that.
Well, there's a really good story behind it. But the way the song was written was originally just an improvisational idea, and I worked on it for a couple of weeks, and then we were trying to come up with a title for it. And if people would remember, there's this passage in there where it goes da-da-da, all through it, da-da-da, all over the place. And to me, that kind of sounded like a phone ringing. So I was thinking, well, it sounds like somebody's like wanting to place a phone call, but I'm like, where's the romance in that? The peaceful romance that would coincide with the music. But then I remembered, now this is a true story. Several years ago, I was on vacation in Portland, Oregon, and I got a voicemail on my phone while I was at Starbucks one morning, and it was this kid named Roberto. But of course, since I didn't recognize the number, I didn't pick up. I'm like, I'm not going to pick that up. I have no idea who this is. And we're having my coffee, and then about, at least 2 minutes later, I get this voicemail on there. I go, well, somebody left a rather lengthy voicemail on there. So I checked it out just on a whim. I was going to delete it right away, but I decided to check it out. And sure enough, it was this young kid, probably like 10th grade or 11th grade. And his name was Roberto. He had an accent, obviously Hispanic. And he was trying to ask this girl out on a date. And apparently he got the wrong number. I don't know if it was on purpose, she gave him the wrong number or what, but he sounded so innocent and so sweet. He was like, oh, we can go out to dinner and my father can drive us or he can drop us off at the movie. And he just sounded so sincere and so sweet. And I was just, after I heard the message, I was about to cry because this girl's never going to get this message. So I'm like, I got to call this guy back. So I just hit the, what is it, redial or call back feature on there.
Yep.
And I got his voicemail on his phone. And I'm like, well, Roberto, I got to tell you sound like a really nice kid and all. I said, but you left this message on my phone. And just in case you see this girl tomorrow in school and she acts like she doesn't know what you're talking about, I want you to know that she's not blowing you off. She actually did not get this message. So if she is standoffish the next day in school, that's the reason why. Or if she just acts like she doesn't know what you're talking about, she's not lying. You just got the wrong message. And so after, I did my little part to make sure that he got the message back. And so I still wonder whatever happened. I never heard back from him again. And I just wonder whatever happened with that. Like, did he finally get together with her? And then, maybe they fell in love and got married. Or what even haunts me even more is if I didn't call back, what would have happened? Maybe it would have been a situation where he finally got angry and said, screw this, I'm giving up, being nice to people, and might have changed his life. I don't know. So I thought that was a really profound intersection, but I wasn't really aware of what happened that morning when I just went out to have coffee. And
yeah,
so that kind of eked its way into that song.
That's amazing. And what I love about that, Thomas, is that that happens all the time in life. I mean, it's just constantly things are going on. And I think if we're in tune with it and we're listening and we're trying to figure out, okay, maybe I need to help. And like you're saying, you were just blown away by the sincerity of this young guy. And maybe that's something that we don't hear a lot today. We hear a lot of canned things and stuff like that. But to hear that, a young man pouring his heart out. He probably thought so long and hard about, do I want to leave her a message? What am I going to say? I don't know what to say. You know, I could just imagine what he was thinking.
Oh, I know. The last thing he said on the phone was so sweet. Oh, you're going to love this. After he says, so yeah, if I see you in school, then, you know, I'm in your science class or something like that. And then he goes, before he hung up, he goes, okay, bye. I think you're really pretty and all. And I go, oh, no! I started crying.
That's good stuff. My guest is Thomas Lowther, and his latest release is Intersections in Life. And you can go on iTunes and Facebook and Pandora, Spotify, CD Baby, Amazon, everywhere. And I love having the fact that people can listen to your music, Thomas, but I also think it's really important that people purchase independent musicians' music and support independent musicians. And although I think, you know, we talked a little bit about that before, about the music industry and you know, how that people can stream music and listen to it. But I also think that it's good to support musicians and to buy music.
Yes. That's true. I know an easy way for people to find me too. Aside from doing that email, like I said, if they Google me, do Thomas Lowther, that's Lowther. Don't Google Thomas Lowther, because you'll come up with a funeral home and a speaker manufacturer from Britain. But if you put Thomas Lowther music, bam, all this stuff comes up. So just put music at the end of it, and then you'll find me.
Okay. That's good. Well, so let's play another song from the album. And let's see. Let's play right here. There is a certain moment. Would you like to talk about that?
Sure. Do you want me to talk now or after?
Why don't we set it up now, please?
Let's see, there's a certain moment. That was a piece where I was just coming up with ideas off the top of my head and was trying to compose the weirdest sounding song that I could possibly think of. It was dark. All these songs are composed at night and almost by candlelight, you would say. So they all have this feel to them. And that one, I was just like, okay, I just want to do something really strange. And over the time of refinement, after I was, you know, making it a little less strange and a little more cohesive, there was a musical phrase at the very beginning that sounds like the music saying, there's a certain moment we strive for, blah, 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 blah. And I kind of had a lyric in my head. And that's where that story of the song came from, where I was thinking there's a certain moment in your life where things seem fragmented and they come together. And with the fates willing, they all come together and things become cohesive at the end. So that might be a part of this one as well. There's an interest. This is the one I think that has an interesting time change in it that I threw in on purpose. It's in 5/4 a couple of times, but you don't really notice it. So I like things to be interesting enough to be where you can listen to them close up and be intrigued, but I still want stuff to be relaxing and peaceful enough that if it's in the background, you'll just have it as an ambient type of backdrop to your romantic evening.
Let's hear it. This is There Is a Certain Moment, and we will be right back and continue our conversation with Thomas right after this. Thank you.
Are you there?
Oh, I had it on mute. Sorry about that. I was worried about your being on mute and put myself on mute.
Whoops, okay.
I really appreciate you being on tonight, Thomas. It's been great talking to you. Is there anything that you would like to talk about your music, or is there any shows or anything that you're good, live things or anything you're working on now you would like to talk about? Maybe some things I missed.
Oh, I don't know. I don't play out live anymore because, as I mentioned about the songs, the way they're written, they're extemporaneous for the most part. And it doesn't mean I'm unable to play them, but it'd be after the time I finish composing them all, I'd have to actually learn how to play them. And that takes a lot of time and a lot of free time, which I really don't have, given my work and other stuff going on in my life. So sadly, no one can really see me play out live at this point. I really should try and remedy that in the future. And what was the first question there? I think you were asking me about the writing process or something. Is that what it was? Oh, are you on mute again? I think you might have muted yourself, unless I'm on mute. I don't know. But you asked me about the writing process. It reminds me of, well, I did mention Mozart before and how he had the ability to write music in his head and dictate it as it happened because he was such a good writer. But for me, I can't really read music very well, and I don't write it on paper well as either as a result. So that's why I have to use a MIDI software to help bring my ideas to fruition, which is more the technique that Maurice Ravel used, the composer, classical composer, because I remember reading an article that Maurice Ravel revealed that he's not like Mozart. In fact, he actually has to sit down and work on his music and refine it over and over to make it come to completion, as opposed to the ease of which Mozart did. He was always jealous of that. And so he goes. Are you still on mute? Can you hear me? Let me check my phone here. It says we're still connected here. Well, maybe I should keep talking then. Oh, goodness gracious. Help me out here, Johnny. But like I said, this took me about 20 minutes, 20 months to work on this CD, and it's available now through CD Baby or through me directly at my email at lowtom@aol.com, Thomas Lowther. And I'll be able to get you a CD to you toot sweet once we assimilate the form of. Once I get your address and everything. Uh-oh, I think I might have lost Johnny here. Not sure if I'm being recorded or not. Nothing worse than dead air, huh? Well, I think we got most of the interview out of the way anyway. There's 11 songs on the CD, and they're all peaceful, they're all relaxing, but they have a dynamic feel to them that a lot of people are surprised by who's heard it. They're surprised that something so peaceful could be so complex. The CD's actually been played in the waiting rooms of psychologists' office. But I have several friends who are psychologists, and they mention how much their people in the waiting room just lay back and listen to it, and it keeps them calm while they're waiting to be drilled by their psychiatrist. Well, what time is it now? What's your 6:52. Gosh, we got 8 minutes left to go, and we're kind of had a technical difficulty, I assume. So perhaps this interview got cut short, and maybe he'll be able to edit more music in later on. Well, again, thanks everybody for listening, and I hope to get a CD out to you. Guaranteed to bring a smile to your face. And it goes great with the whiskey and candlelight at the end of the evening, especially on these dark winter nights now that it's cold out. Okay, well, I guess I'll hang up now. Maybe he can call me back if he wants to. We'll see. Nighty-night, everyone. And stay warm this winter. It's going to be a hard one, I know. Ah.